Greece's economy is locked in limbo, with banks shut, with Greeks now set to vote on their future with or without the European single currency. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The Greek debt crisis escalated dramatically over the weekend after talks with creditors broke down. Greek officials have closed all the banks and, in the middle of the night Greece time, applied limits on the flow of capital. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The government has ordered the banks to close until July the 6th. Customers can still use ATMs, but their withdrawals are limited to $66 each a day. The government had little choice. An all-out run on the banks was getting underway and was likely to accelerate. Over the weekend, the European Central Bank pulled the plug, refusing to extend Greece's emergency funding. Greek Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis blames the country's creditors for the mess.
It is a dark hour for Europe. We know that we have bent over backwards to accommodate our European partners. They have not come to the party. They have not met us halfway, not even a quarter of the way.
The Greek government has called a referendum for next Sunday. The vote should, in effect, decide whether Greece wants to stay in the eurozone. But that may no longer be up to the people. Tomorrow, Greece faces a deadline to repay $1.8 billion to the International Monetary Fund. If it can't or won't pay, default and Grexit could follow. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
What is all this doing to markets at this moment? There's a flight away from the perceived risk of stocks, with the DAX stock index in Germany and the CAC 40 in France down 3.5% each. The 100-share index in London is down 1.75%. Japan's Nikkei index fell 2.9% overnight, 2.5 hours and change before the opening bell on Wall Street. The S&P future is down 1.2%, with similar drops for the Dow and NASDAQ futures. One would expect a flight to bonds, but the 10-year Treasury yield in the U.S. is up sharply to 2.34%. Now to economist Vicky Price, the chief economic advisor at the Center for Economics and Business Research in London. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
You can see the political calculation here, with the Greek prime minister stuck between two difficult courses of action. But do you think the Greek government fully appreciated the challenge of getting from now until that referendum next weekend?
They thought they might be able to have an extension of their bailout. And in fact, they've asked for that again so that they are still covered by all the EU support. And in fact, they didn't get either. And therefore, there is no other alternative really for them but to do exactly what they've done, which is a little bit like what happened in Cyprus, of course, a couple of years ago.
Now, of course, Cyprus is a smaller example. The Greek economy is larger still. Now, you can't keep those banks in Greece closed forever. People have to eat.
What the Greeks, of course, have already done is they've gone and bought loads and loads of the essential items they needed. Things like, you know, toilet rolls and bread and rice and spaghetti and all that sort of stuff. And they think that 60 euros a day is a ridiculously small amount. The only good thing is you can still use credit cards in some shops. And I know for a fact that some people have managed to do that. For the Greeks, it's not going to be easy. And I think there is going to be, I think, an element of panic as to how long this can continue.
Indeed. Now, if Greece has to leave the euro, if that's the outcome of this, we know that European officials have been doing contingency planning on this for months, if not years. But what do you think, Vicky? Can the eurozone handle Greece exiting the euro in some kind of orderly fashion?
I think the Europeans have seen that they can, but I'm suspecting they may have miscalculated. We've already seen what the financial markets are saying. But basically what it does do is it says that the euro is no longer irreversible. The only reason why things are relatively calm, particularly in the bond market, is because the European Central Bank has embarked on this enormous quantitative easing program to the tune of 60 billion a month. And that, of course, is calming the markets mainly because they're buying government bonds in the secondary market.
Vicky Price, Chief Economic Advisor at CEBR in London. Ms. Price, thank you.
Thank you.
And the international regulator of banks says world financial authorities may have run out of tools to fight the next financial crisis. A new report from the Bank of International Settlements has the stark new warning. Marketplace's Mark Garrison is here with that. Mark, the report criticizes central banks for setting low interest rates. What's the concern?
Well, rate cuts are tools governments have to get the economy moving when it stumbles. The idea is they make money cheap, so businesses will be encouraged to invest. In turn, that drives jobs and spending and hopefully creates economic growth. But for the past few years, central banks have pushed interest rates so far down that there's no room to cut them further. Here in the U.S., the Fed has them effectively at zero. This report is sounding the alarm also that cheap money could be creating the next financial crisis. The low rates have too much money flying around and investors taking on more risks than they would otherwise. Report's authors think that this could be a disaster, so they're warning central banks around the world not to drag their feet on pushing interest rates back up.
Marketplace's Mark Garrison, thank you. Marketplace is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. To keep our coverage strong and relevant, please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from Newman's Own Foundation. Donate at marketplace.org by June 30th. There's a grim warning from the United Nations connected to the global drug trade. It focuses on large stockpiles of opium around the world due to ramped up production in Afghanistan to levels not seen since the 1930s. Marketplace's Nova Safo has more.
Afghan farmers have grown opium for decades. When the Taliban was in power, it banned the practice, but now allows it again.
The Taliban has used it to fuel a lot of its activities. It's one of its main sources of revenue.
Michael Kugelman studies Southeast Asia at the Woodrow Wilson Center. With most foreign troops now out of Afghanistan and instability growing, farmers are increasingly planting opium poppies for their own economic survival. Kugelman says the Taliban is also telling them to.
Farmers in Afghanistan are pressured and intimidated and threatened by violence if they don't keep up with poppy production.
The U.S. spent $8 billion to reduce opium cultivation. Thomas Peachman, co-author of the UN Drug Report, says it worked at first. Farmers planted other crops when shown they were profitable.
I mean, it's a really a market-driven approach, but at the same time, really helping and assisting the farmers to change their mindset.
But Peachman says that approach needs stability, something Afghanistan currently lacks. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
And adding to global financial jitters on this Monday, the governor of Puerto Rico has come to the conclusion that the Commonwealth cannot pay its $72 billion in debts. Governor Alejandro Garcia Padilla is telling the New York Times that this admission is necessary to pull Puerto Rico's economy out of what he called a death spiral. If you miss our further coverage of this on the air, it'll be at marketplace.org later. Again, checking the readouts live from the markets, the 100-share index in London is down 1.6%. The DAX in Germany down 3.3% amid this Greek debt crisis. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.